From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this edition, day three, and votes are still being counted, and more questions are being raised. While the media slammed those who are actually raising the questions about the need for transparency. We'll talk about it with former Ohio Secretary of State Ken Blackwell. Ken also serves as chairman of the board of the International Foundation for Electoral Systems, a global leader in democracy assistance. Now, they engage with critical issues in democracy, governance, and elections around the world. Who knew that his resources and talents would be needed here? An example of why we should be questioning the media versus the media questioning us is the early call by Fox News that Joe Biden had won Arizona. We'll get an update from Congressman Andy Biggs, chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, who is a congressman in Arizona. And he says, based on his knowledge, President Trump will win Arizona. And yesterday we talked about how the supposed blue wave didn't happen. In fact, Republicans are poised to pick up as much as possibly a dozen seats in the House. One of those new Republican congresswomen will be joining us, Congresswoman-elect Michelle Fischbach from Minnesota. Joins us. And if there are two takeaways for Christian conservatives in this election, here they are. Are you listening? Number one, we should no longer trust and look to the media. And that includes Fox News. And number two, do not believe the polls. They are increasingly designed to shape the outcome, not project it. Jim Lee, founder of Susquehanna Polling and Research, who called out the pollsters before the election, joins us with post-election analysis of the polling industry. All of that and more coming up on this edition of Washington Watch. If you miss anything on your way home, you can catch it all later, TonyPerkins.com. That's right, TonyPerkins.com. Also, if you happen to be on Twitter and you are still on those social media platforms, which, by the way, are also a part of the media in terms of trying to squelch the conservative voices. But if you're on there, it's at T. Perkins. Okay. This is what I woke up to this morning. The headlines as I read the newspapers in the morning, and the AP, which is supposed to be kind of a neutral reporting body, not the case, has not been for some time. Here's the headline. Trump and allies spread falsehoods to cast doubt on election. Now, this is supposed to be a news story, and it is obviously it's like an editorial from the AP. As there have been questions about ballot dumps, just different things happening, and it's a legitimate issue to raise questions. I am not signing on to any conspiracy theory. I have not gone out and said this happened or it did not happen. We did talk about yesterday how ballots in Arizona that were marked with Sharpie, some of them were called declared spoiled and were not being counted. There was a legal challenge. I think they've reversed course on that now. So I think it's completely legitimate to raise questions when these things surface. And in the age of social media, when people are out there watching and they report these things, you know, I like to validate. I don't ever take anything at face value on social media and things that I get. We verify them first. And this is my promise to you, folks. As I have gone out on a limb here and said, and I've watched this. This is based on years now of watching what's happening in the media. And that includes Fox News. Fox has gone left. And so here's my promise to you. We will report what we know to be true. If we get it wrong, we will tell you so, and we'll come back and we will correct it. Now, that's not happened because we're very careful about what we say. I'm very careful about what I say and who I put on this program. And so that's my commitment to you, that you can look to us as a source of news, of information, true information and news. And it is coming to you. I make no apologies about this. It is coming to you from a biblical perspective. What does that mean? It means that we're looking at all of this in the light of, number one, the fallen nature of man, and that these things are quite possible, but also from a hopeful standpoint that our future does not rest solely upon who wins this election. Now, obviously, life can be easier if it is, but you know what? Bottom line is we serve we serve the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, and we are a part of another kingdom that is an eternal kingdom. So we keep an eternal perspective, and that gives us a different view of the news. I admit it. See, I admit my bias. I am biased toward the truth and God. All right? So I admit it, and I don't hide that. I wish the other side would do that, but they don't. Joining me now to talk more about this, our good friend Ken Blackwell, former Secretary of State of Ohio, and as I mentioned, Chairman of the Board of the International Foundation for Electoral Systems and a Senior Fellow here at the Family Research Council. Ken, thanks so much for joining us again today.
Hey, Tony. Good to be with you. And thanks for putting us and keeping us, you know, just grounded in biblical truth. Because I will tell you today, I woke up, Matthew 10:16, behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves. Be you therefore wise as serpents and as harmless as dove. We are not to be mindless, thoughtless, uncritical, and we're not to be suicidal. We, in fact, have to engage, and we have to understand the message of John, which is those who would do evil love the darkness. And that's why we have been on the side and demanding transparency.
Yeah.
So what we want, just transparency.
Let me start with this question, Ken, because first off, you know, as I said, I don't sign on to any of these conspiracy theories. I'm very slow to believe any of that stuff. I got to verify it. But I just want – you are an expert in this. I mean, you were Secretary of State of Ohio during the 2000 election cycle, which was the big one, the Bush v. Gore. But you also travel the world overseeing elections. Can election results be manipulated?
Yes, they can, particularly when there is a lack of transparency. One of the brilliant aspects of our two-party system and our constitutional republic is that elections work best and have the confidence of the people when there is transparency and bipartisan oversight. When there is a lack of transparency and partisanship in the administration of an election, not bipartisanship, but partisanship, you, in fact, undercut not only the authenticity of the result, you, in fact, undercut the buy-in to the result by those who are governed by the people who come forth as a consequence of a final count.
So Ken, it is to the benefit of everyone that questions are answered in this process, so that, you know, you don't want – and the media appears to be trying to get this thing called and, you know, make Joe Biden the next president, even though we have these states that are outstanding, we have these questions that have yet to be answered, they look like they're trying to rush this process. And I think there's a reason. I'm going to talk about that later in the program. But the reality is it's to the benefit, if Joe Biden were to be president, it's to his benefit that these questions are answered and everyone realizes, yes, all right, it was done by the rules. There is no illegal, irregular, fraudulent behavior, and therefore we don't like the outcome, but the outcome was fair.
Absolutely. Look, Tony, for weeks the mainstream media told us that stories leading up to the election that Democrats were on track to win a majority in the Senate. They told us that Dems would win dozens of seats in the House and knock off a whole host of Republican incumbents. And that was completely wrong. And so all of a sudden, when folks start to question as to whether or not only the instruments, but the narratives that are advanced by the mainstream media hold water or can stand scrutiny, all of a sudden, those folks asking the questions and calling for transparency, it's though we've gone through the looking glass, and what is up is down, and what is down is up. We are now being portrayed somehow as undermining the system.
Yeah.
That is just crazy.
Excellent point, Ken. I'm so glad you brought that up. When you look at the polling data, I mean, this was supposed to be a blue wave, didn't even turn out to be a blue trickle. And in the Republicans are picking up seats in the House, the Senate, some seats still close, but it looks like the Republicans are going to keep the majority there without question. But I want to go back even further. And let's put all the irregularities aside. And let's just take the media and their narrative. Why should we believe a media who, since 2016, has done everything they can to take this president down? Whether it was the Russian conspiracy, collusion there with Russia, whether it was the Ukraine, they gave fuel to what we now know, and they knew, were false narratives because they were pushed by political operatives of the other side. So they want us to trust them in terms of reporting the election outcome?
it's crazy. And, Tony, I've been doing this for 50 years. You know, I'm 72 years old. I've been engaged in the political process for 50 years, and I've, as you mentioned, I've in fact administered elections, and I've watched the use of polling and other instrumentalities to predict results. For the life of me, I cannot understand why Fox News projected Arizona as early as they did. And what's interesting to me is that there are about seven leading sources for those sort of projections. AP and Fox were the only two of the seven that made that early prediction. And I really have serious questions about why they did that, because that created an atmosphere that put those of us who were questioning
right.
some malpractice in Arizona on the defensive.
Right, but was that not the intent?
Oh, I think that was the intent.
Yeah.
It was to put us on the defensive. But it underscores your point. We have to question everyone, including Fox, when we see that sort of behavior and unquestionable.
So who made these calls at Fox?
Well, there are two folks who have their prediction desk. One is an established Democrat operative, and the other is a never-Trumper. But that's their personal preference. I question the methodology that they use. And when you have Nate Silberman, you know, of the 580 fame, who is no lover of Donald Trump, question why Fox made that call that early. I mean, remember, yeah. There are five other major entities that didn't. That
even CNN,
that didn't do it.
Even CNN, as bad as they are, didn't make that call. The point is well made. Going forward, we cannot trust cable news, mainstream media for legitimate information. It's just they have lost all credibility. Ken Blackwell, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Tony.
And we're going to talk about the polling later. Jim Lee's going to be joining us. But next, we're going to talk about Arizona. Congressman Andy Biggs, chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, is going to join us with the latest on Arizona. He says President Trump's going to win Arizona. We're going to talk with him next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Hannah.
What's going on? Why so gloomy?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I had a lot planned to do during the stay-at-home time, and I just didn't do it.
Oh, yeah? What did you have planned that you didn't get to do?
Well, I was actually hoping I would finally be able to get time to do a regular Bible reading routine, and I started a couple of times. I just didn't stick with it.
Don't be too down on yourself. Starting a new routine can be hard, but one way to help is to join in with others and to have a good game plan. I think I have a good solution for you.
Oh, yeah?
Tony Perkins and FRC are doing a 2-year study in the Word. They have it all mapped out.
When did they start? I would be so far behind.
Oh, that's not a problem. You can literally jump in anytime. There's a daily reading, just a couple of chapters a day, with questions to help you think about what you're reading.
Nice. Where can I find this?
Go to frc.org/Bible, and you can get started.
Where's that again?
frc.org/Bible.
Got it. Checking it out now.
In a recent poll, it was revealed that only 6% of Americans hold a biblical worldview. This research also indicated that Christianity's teachings on abortion, marriage, and homosexuality are not only misunderstood, but seen as dangerous and subversive. In response to this trend, Family Research Council has released a new set of resources in our Biblical Worldview series. In addition to our full publications, which cover the topics of Christian political engagement, abortion, religious liberty, and human sexuality, FRC now offers helpful summaries of each publication in this series, as well as accompanying prayer guides to help you and your family pray through these important issues. And finally, our popular Biblical Principles for Political Engagement is now available in Spanish. All these resources are free and available at frc.org/worldview. Again, that's frc.org/worldview.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold. To Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you happen to be on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, a lot of people, you know, we were looking, what state was going to decide this? Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Florida. Well, North Carolina, Florida, Georgia, still all them decided. But where the eyeballs of America are turning is Arizona. Now, we were just talking about how Fox News, in the tank really for the left, I've seen this trend happening, but they called Arizona early. Well, our next guest, who represents the 5th Congressional District of Arizona, also serves as the chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, said way too early because this is the path for President Trump to a second term as president and quite frankly, looks like it could happen. Joining me now, Andy Biggs from Arizona. Andy, welcome so much thank you for being with us and welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Always good to be with you.
All right, Congressman. So you've been through this process and the way they count the ballots, the early ballots and such in Arizona, you see the margins there for the president to pick up Arizona.
Yeah, I think there's plenty of landing room on the runway to bring in the Trump plane for victory. There's still over 500,000 votes to be counted, and he needs to win about 56% of those votes, and he's winning more than that right now. So I'm very optimistic.
So let me ask you the process. Explain the process, how these ballots are being counted, why they're being counted the way they are. And as they're breaking for Trump, what's that based on? Do you think those trends are going to continue?
Okay, so here's the three. There's three groups that they're counting. The actual day of where people actually went in and cast their ballot, none of those were counted on election day. They're being counted now. But they do this in a first-in, first-out way. So what you've got is the first ballots that they're counting are the late early ballots, the ones that were received in the mail on the Friday, Saturday, and Monday before the election. The next group are where people brought in ballots that were early ballots, and they drop them off on the day of. So that's the second group. And then you get to the day of. And so they usually count them first in, first out. They started yesterday morning at 7:30. They went till probably 10:30, 11 o'clock last night, Arizona time. They're counting again as we speak. They'll go through the night again. And then tomorrow they will typically, this is usually what happens, they will say, we're going to just keep counting now until we're done. And they'll finish sometime in the wee hours Saturday morning, usually, something like that.
And so that's when Arizona will be decided.
Yes, that's right. I believe so.
So let me talk to you about the process. There is oversight, transparency in this process?
There generally is, Tony. So what we have is we've got a great group of lawyers and observers, and in every counting center, so you got, because they're done by county in Arizona, in every county where they're making these counts, we have attorneys and observers there, and the other side does too, and I think that's fair. And so it is a much more open and transparent process, than, at least in the counting process, than you find in many states.
So the campaign was very quick to jump on this when Fox, you know, called Arizona for Biden. And I knew that was because they have a very good tracking system, counting the numbers, and they're pretty confident in their numbers. Early votes coming in, as you said, they're the early ones being counted. That was the vote by mail, that typically more the Democrats doing that this time. And the in-person voting, more the Republicans. So that's why the percentages appear to be higher for the are higher for the president, as we're now counting these ballots. And if I think you said about 56% are going toward the president, or just short, shy of 60%. But if he maintains that, he wins Arizona.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I was surprised that anybody would be calling it that early. There were over a million ballots to be counted when they called it. And you're going to have that's about a third of the ballots in Arizona. You actually had people standing in line because we had a few glitches at a few of the polling places. And so if you were standing in line at 7 o'clock when it closed in Arizona, by law, you get to vote no matter how long that takes. And so we had actually some people in a few places standing in line when they called that. And then Tony, when they called it, we hadn't even started counting a single in-person ballot. And what we saw breaking is we were getting numbers on early ballot drop-offs. They weren't counting them. They were just but what we were seeing is almost a 3-to-1 Republican to Democrat ratio and a 2-to-1 independent to Democrat ratio. And we believe that those independents were breaking 5 to 10% in the toward Trump. And so, if that's the case, why would you ever call that? And then they're not taking into account even in these recount. They're saying it's impossible. A lot of these still are in rural counties that we anticipate Trump will win 80% of the vote in some of those counties. So this is very doable. The modeling indicates that he's going to, just looking at it, if all things go well and it's fair and transparent, we believe he's going to win by 30 to 50,000 votes in Arizona.
And that is the path to a second term. Andy Biggs, thanks so much for joining us today.
You bet, Tony. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
All right. Great to talk with you. Andy Biggs, chairman of the House Freedom Caucus. He represents the 5th Congressional District of Arizona. And there you hear it from him. He's been a part of this process, you know, having run in Arizona. He knows how they count the votes. And way, way premature for Fox to call Arizona. Now, again, I think part of this, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit more later, is that this narrative coming out from the media is to basically, just like the polling was, it's to kind of cause you to just kind of, well, just to capitulate, to just resign yourself. Oh, well, I guess we're going to have President Joe Biden. I mean, that is what is behind this narrative from the media. And try to say, oh, let's just, you know, can't happen, can't win. It's just not true. Now, if it is true, then fine. We'll live with the outcome and the results as long as we know they're fair and it's true and it's right. But we can't say that right now. And as we see here, as we just heard from Arizona, that appears to be a state that President Trump is going to win. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about how that predicted blue wave didn't happen. We're going to talk about one of the new members of Congress. We're going to be talking with Congresswoman-elect Michelle Fischbach from Minnesota. She joins us next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Since the 1973 Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision, Congress and many states have taken various actions to stop taxpayer dollars from funding abortions or the abortion industry. As early as 1976, Congressman Henry Hyde led the effort to ban federal funding for abortions. The Federal Hyde Amendment, named after him, established the principle that abortion is not health care, and therefore taxpayers should not be forced to fund abortions. Despite these efforts, the abortion industry still receives millions of dollars each year in taxpayer money. In 2019, Planned Parenthood, America's largest abortion provider, received $616.8 million in government funds. Family Research Council's newly updated pro-life map tracks how your state has taken action to stop taxpayer funding of abortions. Go to frc.org/pro-life maps to see where your state stands in the fight for life. That's frc.org/pro-life maps.
Aw, man.
What's wrong?
I just missed Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, and our congressman was going to be on the show today.
Oh, that's not a big deal.
What do you mean?
Well, you can always catch the replay of the day's show.
How's that?
With the Stand Firm app.
Yeah?
Yep, you can catch that day's program and so much more. You can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes while conveniently going about your day. You can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on the main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news.
Wow, I definitely use that. How do you find the app?
Just visit frc.org/app and download, or search Stand Firm in the App Store.
Okay, that's Stand Firm.
Yep, Stand Firm.
How do you know all this?
Because I'm a SageCon, but that's another story.
Huh?
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Now, I don't know if I mentioned this earlier. I may have. We're covering a lot of ground here very quickly. But North Carolina, they still have not called North Carolina. And the Elections Board, which is controlled by Democrats, I think it's a 2-3, 2-1 margin, two Democrats controlling it, one Republican, have said that they're not going to count any more ballots until November the 12th. So they're not going to decide the outcome of the election in North Carolina. We were just talking about Arizona. It could be Saturday morning before we have the outcome there. And so you still have, you have Georgia. You've got several states, critical states, that have yet to be called. So we could be days, weeks, maybe litigation. So we don't know what's going to happen in the presidential just yet. As I said, I'm going to repeat this over and over. Don't listen to the media because they want to put this thing behind us. But we need to, as long as there's room to fight and there's a necessity to fight, we should. But all that said, we can celebrate some things that we know to be true, and that is that Republicans have not only held a wall against a blue wave, there wasn't even a blue trickle, as I mentioned, because the Republicans appear now to they've already gained 6 seats in the House. It may, when they're all counted, maybe as many as 12. Well, joining me now is one of the new members of Congress that will be joining us in January from Minnesota's 7th Congressional District, Congresswoman-elect Michelle Fischbach. Michelle, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on today.
Well, Michelle, you weren't supposed to happen. You, along with several others, won seats in a cycle that was supposed to be all about the Democratic Party. What happened?
Well, we knocked off a 30-year incumbent because the people of the 7th District in Minnesota want a strong conservative voice. They are conservative people, and they were not being represented by a conservative in Congress. They were being represented by someone who went voted for Nancy Pelosi and supported her agenda, and they didn't want that anymore. And so we're very – and I think that's the way the country is going. And we are still praying that President Trump is able to win the reelection because of the strange things that are happening now with the appearing, suddenly appearing ballots. But I will tell you, the folks in the 7th District in Minnesota want a strong conservative in Congress, and that's what they're going to get.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point because, again, this narrative that there was going to be this blue wave, that we were going to see Democrats take greater control of the House. They were going to win the Senate, 83.5% victory, according to Newsweek just a couple of weeks ago, didn't happen. And so, you know, when you look at that and you look at what's happened in the presidential race, it's inconsistent. And so that's why I think it gives legitimacy to those that are raising questions, those of us raising questions about some of these things happening in the presidential. So that's something for people to keep in mind. But let me ask you this. In terms of your race in the 7th Congressional District, what were the driving issues as you were out campaigning, talking to people? What was it they wanted to see happen?
You know, one of the big things that they talked to us a lot about was the economy. And, you know, we had the shutdowns with the COVID, and it was devastating to a lot of the businesses in rural Minnesota. And they want to see that, you know, President Trump had that economy going pretty well before all of the COVID shutdowns. And we happen to be especially hard hit because we've got a DFL governor here who just decided that everything should be shut down and didn't think about the damage that he would be doing to a lot of the businesses. And so they wanted to make sure that economy gets back going and we get things back open and moving. I mean, and the overregulation and restrictions are done within reason.
Yeah, and you know what? I do think that's a major factor in some of these blue states that have Democratic governors who have used this coronavirus as a I'm just going to say it, an excuse to strengthen the arm of government and close down businesses, shutter churches, that there's been pushback against that. And I think we saw that. I think that's evident in your race.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, we had an attorney general, Keith Ellison, who was calling businesses and threatening them, you know, if they dared to open up. And you're absolutely right. This is their way of stretching out that long arm of government and really putting a thumb on businesses and free enterprise.
So when you come to Congress in January, Michelle, what's going to be at the top of your list of priorities?
Well, you know, first and foremost, we're an ag district, and so we will be looking at ag industry. We're going to continue our conversation with the farmers that we started during the campaign. And, you know, we've got a farm bill coming up in 2023, and we want to make sure that the farmers are really getting what they want and need from Washington, D.C., not what Washington, D.C. tells them they want or need.
Right.
So that is going to be really opening up that conversation and looking at our small rural communities and making sure that they're strong and, you know, that they are able to continue to prosper and attract new people and bring new people into rural Minnesota because it's a great way of life. It's the heartland of the whole country and making sure that they have what they need to succeed in rural Minnesota. The workforce, the jobs, those kinds of things that we can really promote and make sure that they are running well and it is a great place to live.
Well, we are excited that you'll be joining us here in Washington, and we want to congratulate you on a victory, and look forward to seeing you in January here, Michelle.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it, and God bless you, and continue to pray that President Trump wins.
Absolutely. We will certainly be doing that. Michelle Fischbach, Congresswoman-elect for the 7th Congressional District in Minnesota. Check it out. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, when we come back, we'll talk about the media and how the media has been slanted in going into this election. Actually, slanted since day one of the Trump administration. Why should we be believing them? Well, the polling data, the same. Jim Lee, founder of Susquehanna Polling and Research, joins us next to talk about the polling industry. Where do they go from here? Don't go away. We're back after this.
Are you looking to grow closer in your relationship with Jesus Christ and in your knowledge of God's Word? Family Research Council has a three-part series titled, Three Ways to Read the Bible. This series shares helpful ways to be encouraged and directed by God's truth by observing the text of the Bible and applying it to your life. There is no better time than now to get to know God through His Word by looking into the Bible to see what it says about itself, God, and humanity. There's no better time than now to begin devoting time to the Lord and to seek out His meaning for you. This blog series is a great primer on opening your eyes and heart to Him through the Bible amid the toils and troubles of today. Check out this helpful resource and learn how to read the Bible with not just your eyes, but with your heart and mind as well. To learn more, visit frcblog.com/ways to read. That's frcblog.com/ways to read.
When President Donald Trump announced his nomination of Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court, critics were quick to point not to this qualified nominee's record, but rather to her religious affiliations as a reason she ought not be allowed to serve as a Supreme Court justice. In an increasingly secular culture, it is not only the media that views faith as problematic for those appointed to judicial positions. Senators, particularly Democrats, have inappropriately interrogated nominees with comments and lines of questioning spanning theology, congregation membership, and associations with faith-based nonprofits, all seemingly with the intent to discredit the nominees. Family Research Council recently released a publication addressing this important issue. To learn more about what the Constitution says about religious tests, visit frc.org/religious tests. That's frc.org/religious tests.
The rapidly changing moral landscape of the 21st century presents a challenge for Christians committed to biblical sexual ethics. An uprising against morality has overturned centuries of norms concerning the family, marriage, and human sexuality. Secular culture is not the only challenger of Christian sexual ethics. Increasingly, theologically liberal churches and denominations are rejecting the church's historic teaching on marriage. As a result, Christians are facing increasing pressure to compromise the Bible's teaching on human sexuality. How should Christians who are committed to God's Word respond to these challenges? What does the Bible teach about sexuality? Family Research Council has a new publication that presents the biblical principles for human sexuality. It lays out a survey of culture, scripture, and church history that will help pastors and all Christians meet modern-day challenges to biblical sexuality with truth and love. To access this publication, visit frc.org/human sexuality.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. And again, I encourage you to share this information with your friends. You can listen online. You can download our Stand Firm app, and each day you'll be alerted to when the program is coming on if you're not within the earshot of one of the 800 stations that covers or carries, rather, Washington Watch. You can watch online in many ways. You can get the podcast. You can, but you need to listen, because I'm telling you, increasingly, as we've seen the media, they have an agenda, and it's quite frankly, I don't think it's in the best interest of the country, because they have been against this president. We've seen their narrative going into this election, trying to discourage turnout, conservatives trying to shape the outcome, not predict it. Very similar to the what we're going to talk about here in just a moment about the polling industry and what they've done. Because I really see in many ways the media, they have their pollsters and they're in cahoots. Because, you know, if you want as, and it's not all, because we're going to talk with a good pollster here in just a moment. But if you want to continue the business, you got to give the client what they want. And obviously some in the media, they want kind of a spin on the polls to fit their narrative. Now, here's another tidbit of information when it comes to why we should be raising questions and why this election is filled with anomalies. Okay, first off, we've talked about the media and how, you know, Trump was not going to win. There was going to be this blue wave, and it didn't happen. I mean, Joe Biden did not walk away with this election. We're 3 days into it and still counting, and it's going to come down to the wire. But when we look, we just talked with a new member of Congress, Congresswoman-elect Michelle Fischbach from Minnesota. The Republicans should not have gained seats, but we're looking potentially as many as 12 seats in the House. They did not lose the Senate as predicted. Again, I made reference to a Newsweek article. They said 83.5% chance that the Democrats take the Senate. Didn't happen. Here's another piece of information. The only time that I've been able to identify in history where an incumbent president lost his re-election bid and their party did not lose Congress was Jimmy Carter in his re-election bid to Ronald Reagan in 1980. Now, the Democratic Party lost the Senate, but they held the House, even though they lost 35 seats in the House because they had a big majority. Well, Donald Trump losing his re-election, if that were to occur, and is playing through the narrative, but the Republicans holding on to any part of Congress is almost unprecedented. So again, you have to look at these things to say, is everything right? And so it's legitimate to ask questions, and that's what we're doing, even though the AP is slamming conservatives for asking questions about how this election is unfolding. So part of this has been the polling, setting the narrative for what is happening right now. And joining me now to talk more about this, Jim Lee, founder of Susquehanna Polling and Research in Pennsylvania. He was on the program last week going into the election talking about how the polling industry needs to, you know, answer some tough questions. Jim, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Tony. Pleasure to be with you today.
So, Jim, let me ask you this. Based on now what has happened in this election, are you more convinced that the polling industry needs to be asked and must answer some tough questions?
I sure am. I think the media needs to take an honest look at itself. ABC News and their pollster, Nate Silver, produced a poll in the battleground state of Wisconsin, Tony, just last week, showing Biden with a 17-point lead in a state that's been trending Republican the past 12 years. And it was instantly dismissed by legitimate polling firms like us that just knew that was never going to happen. And we saw this coming with our public release in September that there's polling doing similar types of mistakes that are being made this cycle that were made last cycle. I cited Franklin Marshall College in Pennsylvania as an example that had Hillary Clinton winning the state by 10 points last time. And of course, Trump went on to win the state by a point. So we're seeing the same mistakes being made over again. And I think part of the problem, quite frankly, is some of these academic polling institutions are run by professors that have tenure. And, you know, if they miss an election, life goes on for them. And, you know, they live to fight another day. Guys like me that live and breathe this stuff, that have private sector clients, if we have polling that's off the mark, we don't get business.
Right.
We're, you know, our companies, our revenue streams, our clients use other firms. We can't afford to be wrong.
There's a
personal issue here, too, with just the sheer nature of these media-sponsored polls by academic firms that just don't have as much skin in the game as guys like.
Yeah, they don't have to be. Their survival doesn't depend on their accuracy. It depends upon them delivering the goods, I think, to what the media companies, media outlets want. Now, Jim, let me ask you this question. Okay. Now, I know, and I'm trying to be very careful because I have to do this all the time with Congress. I don't want to paint everybody with a broad brush. And we're very careful to talk about this. When we talk about Congress, we talk about the bad things in Congress. But there's a lot of good people in Congress. And so when we talk about – now, I will say this. There's not many in the media that I can say this about. I mean, when I see Fox News going left, I've watched this now for the last 5 years. But in the polling industry, I've used pollsters. I use pollsters now. I've used them when I was a candidate. When I was in office, I used them. And you're right. We want accuracy. And so we go to polling firms that we know are going to do a good job. But let me just ask you this question. I know this is not the intent, but polling has a psychological effect upon the public. I mean, that's one of the reasons we do the polling. We want to know where the public stands. But there's also another use for that polling. It helps shape what the public thinks. Is that not true?
That's dead on. It's dead on. It's exactly the case. And I think some of the psychology, Tony, we'll be looking at now, and this is something we've been doing. We're not sure others did it. But the head-to-head question in our polling in our five battleground states we surveyed showed a razor-thin margin in every state, Wisconsin, Florida, Arizona, Pennsylvania, and North Carolina. But the very next question in our surveys, Tony, was who are your neighbors voting for? And in every state, even in Wisconsin, where we technically had Biden leading, there was a 15-point surge for Trump in that same question, who are your neighbors voting for? So Trump was winning on a question like that. And it said to me the psychology of voters doing these surveys needs to be looked at, because people are being more guarded about who they're voting for. But why in a state where we have Biden up by three would we have, by a 15-point margin, voters say their neighbors are voting for Trump? So there's some very real, you know, analysis that needs to be done about how, you know, honest people are being with their surveys, particularly when, you know, many Trump voters feel, let's face it, ashamed to say they're for him publicly when he's being called every name in the book.
Right. I think that's an important point because it's almost like the media, you know, and I mean, look, there's – I was talking about this earlier in the program, so for our listeners, this may be a repetitive. But going all the way back to 2016, we've seen some in the media who have been dead set against Donald Trump. They've in the media, they've pushed forward, you know, the Steele dossier, and they pushed the Republican – I'm sorry, the Russian conspiracy, Ukraine. I mean, just all of these things. And then, you know, when they're proven false, they just move on to the next thing. They don't apologize, don't change the way they're doing it. And so you're right. When someone – then that media firm calls and says, who are you supporting for president? Well, after you've been hearing this 24/7 negative about this particular man, do you think you're going to step forward in this cancel culture and say, oh, I'm voting for the guy you hate? I mean, it just doesn't happen.
I agree. I think Biden was the popular – you know, politically correct answer in our polling. And that's why we have to think differently about the kinds of questions we're asking. But, you know, I would like to talk about brass tacks here in Pennsylvania. You asked me earlier before we got on here, you know, what's happening here. I can tell you what I believe is happening in PA, why a lot of firms missed it. In Philadelphia, where, of course, the Trump campaign has now mounted a vigorous defense, I'm not sure most people realize that the turnout in Philadelphia was 590,000 votes. That's off by 75,000 fewer votes cast than 4 years ago. Why is that important? Clinton came out of Philadelphia, Tony, with a 450,000 vote margin in 2016. That's been reduced to a 350,000 vote margin based on the current results that have been released. That's a drop of 100,000 votes in the city of brotherly love, where the Clinton margins were enough to keep her competitive in PA. And to add to that, the approval rating for Trump among minorities was showing 30-35% of voters approving of the job he's doing. Right now, he's on track to get 20% of the vote out of Philly, Donald Trump. That is a huge blow to the Democratic machine that usually produces margins for winning candidates in Pennsylvania. And I think that tells the story about why Donald Trump is winning Pennsylvania and probably will be declared the winner here. Because of that lower turnout in Philly, the base wasn't fired up. Trump's doing better with minorities. He wasn't given any credit for that. Right. I mean, what does it say about the fact that 3 in 10 blacks like this guy when the media is calling him a freaking monster?
Right. Well, we saw that in Florida, in Miami-Dade County, heavily Hispanic, where he did quite well. He's doing well with Hispanics. In fact, about, I think, if the numbers hold, about 25% of Donald Trump's support is non-white. He has made great inroads in the minority community because of his, number one, his economic policies, and as well as in the Hispanic community with his pro-life policies as well. So he's making grounds there, and that is something that the pollsters, many, did not pick up on, and quite frankly, I don't think some wanted to pick up on. And that's why I think you're raising this issue of asking the hard questions of pollsters going forward. I know it's obviously in your self-interest because we've got to have people being able to trust the polling industry because, quite frankly, they're down there right now with, I think, used car salesmen have a higher standing with people than pollsters right now.
Well, that's very true. And, you know, I wasn't afraid to say it before the election, which meant I was putting myself out there to be criticized if our polling looked like it was off. And,
right,
of course, you know, God bless, we did some things right. Our polling showed every one of these battleground states would be decided by, you know, 2 or 3 points. That's what happened. And look, I'm not here to say we're a pro-Trump pollster.
No.
I had Biden leading in Wisconsin. He's been declared the winner there.
I mean, the facts.
We knew these races would be decided by less than a couple percentage points all across the board. And, you know, the industry does need to take a careful look at itself. Is it a methodology question? Sure. But I think you're right. I'm not sure some of these institutions want to take a close look at their own polling because life goes on for them.
Yeah.
You know, for Franklin and Marshall College in Pennsylvania, an Ivy League school that had Clinton winning by 11 points here just days before Trump's upset victory, life goes on for the professor running that institution of polling. He's tenured, you know, whatever. He's going to have some regression analysis to show why he wasn't that far off. But you know what? Guys like me, we get cast in the same negative light when this happens. And
right.
It's time for other firms to stand up and say, this is enough.
And that's something why, and you were out,
we're all being made to look bad.
You were out before the election raising this issue. And that's why I have you on the program here after the election, because you are looking for the truth. And that's what we want. It doesn't mean we necessarily like it. I want the facts. But I want the facts. And so I appreciate that there are those like you out there that are trying to do that and hold the industry accountable. Jim, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome, Tony. Have a great day. And thank you for giving us the time to talk about this today.
Absolutely. I think it's important. Jim Lee, founder of Susquehanna Polling and Research in Pennsylvania. I'd love to have guys on here who will be straightforward and honest. Might not want to hear what they have to say, but at least knowing that they're honest. And I do think, again, look at the polling industry and the media. They've called themselves into question again. And we would be foolish after the 2016 election, when this is almost a repeat of it, to just go on as business as usual. It's time to reevaluate who we're listening to. Now, I promised, mentioned earlier, I wanted to kind of tell you why I think the media is trying to push this thing very quickly into the bag of Joe Biden and move on, and why I think the president needs to answer all these questions. And if it has to go to court, it has to go to court. But here's what happens. If the Electoral College doesn't is not able to declare this election by, I think, the December, what happens is that this goes to Congress. Now, the Democrats had hoped that they would have the Senate and they would have the supermajority in the House, and so they could put this thing in the bag. But the way it will work is that if this goes to Congress to decide the outcome, because the Electoral College can't meet because they haven't decided the electors, because the count hasn't finished, it's based upon House delegations in the House, 50 state delegations, and the majority, they get one vote each, and they vote for the president. Right now, the Republicans have 26 of the delegations in the House. They have a majority. In the Senate, each senator gets one vote, and they vote for the vice president, and that's how it's decided. This is why you're going to see this increase to try to cause the Republicans to wave a white flag and move on, even though there's a cloud of controversy and questions around the election. That's the very reason we can't do that. We have got to stand firm and make sure that all of these questions are, in fact, answered. All right, folks, again, if you missed anything, good program here today. A lot of information. If you missed anything, I encourage you to go back and listen to it or share it with friends. Go to TonyPerkins.com. It's all archived right there. Okay, until next time, I leave you with this, the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul. And he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.